see more information, go to freedomwatchusa.org, freedomwatchusa.org.
Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Klayman.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking with Larry Klayman. He was one of the plaintiffs in a case, Klayman and Strange versus Obama, which was the subject of a decision by Circuit Court Judge Leon in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, stating that the NSA was violating the Constitution, specifically the Fourth Amendment, prohibition against unreasonable search and seizure. And then in the past couple of days, we've had a follow-up decision released by Judge Pauly in Manhattan concerning an ACLU case versus James Clapper. That case was dismissed following a motion by the government. There will be a Senate hearing convened January 14th of 2014 by Senator Leahy of Vermont, and everyone expects this issue to end up before the Supreme Court in 2014. For KBOO News, I'm Jimmy Tardy.
KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/stationmanagerhire2013.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Oregon Council 75, representing over 25,000 Oregon public and private sector employees, families, and communities, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members since 1942. More information at www.OregonAFSCME.com.
KBOO is seeking...
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. You're listening to Labor Radio, and I am Lane Ponce, your co-host, and my co-host is...
Michael Morrow. Happy to be here.
Yep, and we're here with another exciting venue of things to do tonight. We've got two people calling in. Our first call-in is Ron Verzu, and he will be talking about a video that he's produced about Joe Hill. Our second call-in is Mr. Michael Monk, who is the author of the Portland Red Guide, and he will be talking about some green workers and some union activities that he's interested in. So, Michael, you want to start out with a few requests or announcements that you have?
Yeah, as Lane and I were exchanging emails about I might like to talk about, it is the 30th of December. That means we have one more day where people can get done what they need to get done for their 2013 taxes. That would include donations. Sometimes you can make donations in the next year, but for the most part, you need to do it by midnight tomorrow night. And that would, of course, include KBOO donations for those of you out there who are not members, who have not re-upped for a while. But thinking in terms of political donations, one of the organizations that I donate to that is tax deductible, it's 501c3, is the Oregon Center for Public Policy, OCPP.org. It's Chuck Sheketoff's shop, and he does an amazing job with a very small staff of providing us with very useful information related to economic issues. You can check out their website, OCPP.org. And pull up things like, back in October, folks might remember, we had the grand bargain coming out of Salem. That's where myself and a couple hundred thousand other public employee retirees are going to donate $5 billion in retirement to somehow fix the state's economic problems.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. And one of the things that's on the website, and I pulled this up right away, is a little piece entitled Grand Bargain Tax Games Begin. And it's looking like, tax breaks for the 1%. paid for with my retirement. One of the other interesting aspects of this was the difficult votes that had to happen in Salem around this. And one of the other things that people can actually get a tax credit for, not a deduction, but an actual credit. There are a lot of folks out there who would like to see publicly funded elections. And there are folks now, including people in corporate America. The founder of PIMCO came out a couple of months ago and said, our big problem is money in politics, big money, corporation money in politics. In Oregon, people have the ability to publicly fund elections. If you owe Oregon taxes, you can take a $50 credit right off of your taxes for a single person, or for two people, $100. My wife and I do this every single year. How can you get this? You can donate to a politician or a political party to get this particular credit. And some PACs out there will provide also this credit. Check with the website to make sure that the people or organizations you donate to are eligible for this, but we do it every year. It's $100, and it's our contribution to publicly funded campaigns. So I have folks that I support in the legislature, and other people might as well. We may talk more about them later on after we have our conversations with the folks who are in. So please remember, by tomorrow night, you need to do your donations, and you also need to make that donation for your Oregon tax credit, your political tax credit.
Right. I've been making out some checks as of late and mailing them off or delivering them in person. So that's a good tip for us tax evaders. It's not quite the same as tax evasion.
It's not quite the same thing, no.
No, that's interesting about public funded elections. That could be a whole show in itself, because money in politics.
Multiple shows.
Yes. Right. Yes. Because you can't even run for a school board without having quite a bit of money in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And yet we claim that anybody can be president as long as they're a millionaire or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're hoping to hear from Ron Verzu about his Joe Hill video. And right now we have a little bit of a history and some music about Joe Hill, and then we'll go into an interview.
In 1914, while organizing in Salt Lake City, Utah, Joe Hill was arrested and charged with murder. The case created worldwide attention. Even President Woodrow Wilson tried to intervene, but Hill was convicted and executed by firing squad. When his body was brought to Chicago, 30,000 people marched in his funeral procession, and Joe Hill became a martyr to the labor movement.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake Joe, by God, says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I ain't dead. Says Joe, but I ain't dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe. I didn't die, says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life, smiling with his eyes, says Joe what they forgot to kill.
Okay, we're back. And do we have Ron on the phone?
We do. Hello.
Hi, Ron. We just had a little introduction about Joe Hill with some music. So now we would like to know about your work and what you found out about Joe Hill.
Very good. Well, I think I found out something quite unique about Joe Hill. The video we've just made, it's about 8 minutes long, is entitled Joe Hill's Secret Canadian Hideout.
And you're interested search. You're interested in Canadian hideouts because you are from Canada.
I am from Canada, and I'm speaking to you now from Canada, but I live in Oregon.
Yes.
And I've been doing all sorts of work around the Pacific Northwest in my labor history role. But this particular one goes way back to when I was a kid, because I grew up in a smelter town. I was a smelter rat. And we heard about Joe Hill being around that area when we were growing up, along with a few others. Big Bill Haywood visited town, and Charles Moyers, and a few other Wobblies. So certainly Western Federation of Miners leaders. So we kind of had an education as we grew up and learned about the smelter's history, and Joe Hill was part of that.
And what part of Canada was that?
It's in an area of south central British Columbia called Trail, British Columbia, which has been a smelter town since the late 1890s.
And how did you happen to cross finding this information?
Well, as I say, it was kind of a local rumor. You know, you kind of grew up hearing about, oh yeah, Joe Hill was here, and you know, he hung out at this old miners' hall up in the nearby town of Roslyn, which was a mining community for years, gold and copper and silver. And we thought, gee, this is kind of neat, but I never thought that I'd really ever confirm the rumor or not, or even have a chance to look into it. So a few months ago, I actually went up to Roslyn, which is my home area, as I say, and I started asking people about it. And the video is a result of that little bit of research.
And how, it's 8 minutes long, and what does it cover, and how did you put it together?
Well, I did a kind of a shooting script and an editing script, but the way it started was I actually started to, very much like Joe Hill, although I'm not nearly as qualified, I started rewriting the tune that you've just played. And instead of using the lyrics that Earl Robinson and Alfred Hayes used, the original writers, I inserted the words that would fit with Joe Hill's apparent hangout in this little BC mining community. And so what we had was a couple of local people actually did the song. In fact, they did it at a little coffee house called the Joe Hill Coffee House, which runs every month in Roslyn at the old Roslyn Miners Union Hall. So it was all fitting together pretty nicely. And Roslyn itself, of course, has all sorts of historical interest. It really was an old mining town with all sorts of get-rich-quick types. And, you know, so it had a lot of interest for me as local history. But also, I think it was a search for, did this guy who came to town, who was a famous, you know, singer-songwriter and a radical, did it have any effect on the local people? And did it still resonate for them? And, of course, stumbling across the Joe Hill Coffee House suggested that, yes, it does. They're very interested in their local history, and it's a very rich one.
And what did you have a showing there in Roslyn, or what's your
Not
plan?
Not yet, because we're just finished putting the finishing touches on it. But the people that are in the video have seen it and liked it and made a few changes to a couple of little things. But by and large, it's intact. It's what we produce. So yeah, it'll be fun because the Roslyn Miners Union Hall also houses a film festival every year. So we will probably likely show it at the film festival as well.
What time of the year is the film festival?
I believe it's coming up in February, but I've got some scouts out to just see what the possibilities are and whether there will be an interest. But I'm pretty sure there will, because Roslyn is definitely one of the stars of the video itself. So it's one of the characters.
And who wouldn't want to be in British Columbia in February? Hey, Aaron, this
well,
is
it is a famous ski resort.
Okay,
this is it's no longer a mining town. It's very much a ski resort.
This is Michael with a couple of questions. And first, to clarify for folks who are busy Googling this. You pronounce it Roslyn, but it looks like Ross Land.
Yeah, well, we grew up calling it Roslyn. So
there you go.
We
okay.
kind of put a Z in there, I guess.
Well, two,
or a Z, rather. Sorry, there's my Canadian side coming
up. Two questions for you about this. One is, will it be possible, and if so, when and how, for folks in our vast listening audience to grab onto this video? And then part two of my question is, it looks like you had some Kickstarter help. Is there a way that folks could continue to assist with this project? Is it going to be ongoing?
Well, Kickstarter was all new to me, and when I put a little blurb in, you have to do a video with it to sort of promote the thing. I wasn't aware of how it worked. In fact, it does time out, and so those initial attempts to get a little bit of funding for it have timed out. But people have been very generous and giving donations of anywhere from $10 to $100, including some of the labor movement people that I know. So I'm thinking, you know, I sort of decided I would fund this one way or the other just because I wanted the story out, and I wanted to make people think about history and how it's meaningful, and it actually is, although it's radical history, it's about the community, and it's about, you know, how people respond and carry on some of the traditions and some of the beliefs that are set in you know, consciousness by things like people like Joe Hill and by things like the Roslyn Miners Union Hall. And I think we've accomplished that with the video. How to get it? It'll be posted on YouTube and Vimeo, two of the main ways to get things out. It'll be posted on, you know, of course, my website, ronverjou.ca. It'll be posted on my Facebook page and Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever else is out there, it'll get out that way. We've also made a short DVD with a proper jewel case jacket and more information on the local historical notes. So including, by the way, Michael, our rendition of I Dreamed I Saw Joe Hill last night. The
with lyrics some in the, extra Canadian Hill. Lyrics.
Yeah, that's right.
He sounds good, eh?
Well, Ron,
yeah, right.
Why don't you spell out your name in total so that people can check your website?
Very good. It's the site is www.ronverju.ca, and the Verju part of it is spelled V as in Vancouver, E-R, Z as in zebra, U-H.
And I thank you for giving me some phonetic help in pronouncing your name. That was very helpful.
Okay. Well, you sent us back to the drawing board on that, but I think we got it, and you did well. It sounds just like it's supposed to sound.
Oh, good. Thank you
great.
So much.
And you've got a University of Oregon connection, I hear.
Well, yeah, actually, it's an interesting one because my wife works at the Labor Education and Research Center at the University of Oregon, and so we've got a lot of friends that work in labor history and share our love for labor history. So we've got more videos planned, and I'm sure they'll point us in directions we need to
excellent.
Go in.
Excellent. Well, we'll stay current with those, and it's great you've got the connection to LURC, and go Ducks.
Okay. Yeah, go Ducks, right, yeah, for sure.
All right, Ron, now, is there anything else you'd like to add about some of the content in the DVD, or is that, we want people
well,
to be curious?
Well, what I find interesting about it is there's a local labor leader, a local historian, and then a former mayor who are quoted, who tell us their views in the video, and I just found it fascinating that they actually... nobody necessarily knows for sure whether Joe Hill came to town and was hidden out at the hall, but what was left there, and I make the point in the video, was that you still get a sense of a community that's high spirited, looks out for itself, fights for human and labor rights and social justice, and that's a message we think comes out in the video in a way that it will reach other people beyond our usual friends and people who are concerned about these issues. It will just reach a little bit further and say to a church basement hall or a church basement audience or maybe a bunch of students in a classroom, hey, this is something that'll raise a few questions for you. You can go find out more if you want, but the video gives you a little taste.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in, Ron, and we will look forward to seeing the video.
Very good.
All
okay.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Have a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7, and we just finished up an interview with Ron Verju, and he has worked on a Joe Hill video that's available on YouTube and other places. Next
or,
up,
or will be soon.
Will be no, I think it's available now. Next up is Michael Monk, and I think he is here with us now. Mr. Monk, are you on the phone?
I am. Good to be with you again.
Yes, again. We like to have you come in and speak to us. What is your favorite topic for this evening?
Well, I thought I would try to relate Joe Hill to a major labor issue in our local area today, which is the lockout of the longshoremen at the grain terminals in Portland and Vancouver. The connection is that the Wobblies, and Joe Hill is a symbol of the Wobblies, had as their main slogan, injury to one is an injury to all. And so I believe that Joe Hill would be rather disappointed in the reaction of the rest of the labor movement to these lockouts.
There Could you has tell us more about the reaction that you're speaking about?
Well, even within the ILWU itself, the idea that the scabs are running two of the major grain terminals in the Northwest, in Portland and Vancouver, and that they have locked out the ILWU since the end of last year at Vancouver and since May in Portland, and that the rest of the union is working as normal throughout the West Coast ports. And there are no secondary boycotts. There are no major rallies from the rest of the labor movement to protest the scabbing. And this, I think, would have disappointed Joe Hill, because the slogan, which is actually the slogan adopted by the ILWU itself, is being violated. So I think that the lack of interest, the lack of action, the lack of support from the labor movement to the ILWU, and within the ILWU, support from the other locals around all over the West Coast, is a bit disappointing. And that's the theme that I'd like to discuss, debate, argue about with you and your listeners.
So, Michael, this is Michael.
Yes, Michael.
I think part of the passivity around this might be for those who get their news from the Oregonian.
Absolutely.
And I have in front of me Friday, December 13th. Oh, my gosh, Friday the 13th. front page, above the fold, big color photograph. And the headline says, "A Victory for Longshore Union."
Yes.
And The first sentence, and this is by Richard Reed of the Oregonian, the first sentence says, "In the end, the powerful West Coast Longshore Union got its way." Now, from all appearances, things are settled. The governor has stepped in and waved his magic governor's wand, and everything is fine. You don't think that's so?
Well, that article was not about the lockout on the grain terminals. That article and that presumed victory was for two electricians' jobs in which the IBEW and the ILWU have had a conflict about for over a year. And that was indeed settled by the governor a few weeks ago here in Oregon. But that has nothing to do, or it has no direct impact on the lockout and the scabbing at the grain terminals in Portland and Vancouver.
Other than the mistaken feeling that things are
right.
Well.
Right, right.
Right, and I would also add that the Oregonian is a notoriously anti-labor, anti-union newspaper, and of course its current version is founded on breaking the strike in 1959. Of the unions at Portland's newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who gets their news about the labor situation locally from the Oregonian is bound to come up with very, very anti-union rants. Especially interesting is if you read the comments section on the online Oregonian, you'll find some really disgraceful anti-union rants. And I'm afraid that this is part of the boss's campaign to break unions and put them in a defensive position.
Right. Now, Michael, I know that you have an ongoing website that's located at www.michaelmunk.com, and that you cover a lot of things that are never, ever seen in the newspaper. So I'd like to make sure that our listening audience knows that's a good place to get information, because you cover a variety of things. So tell us more about your feelings about this grain lockout.
Well, it has a very interesting background to it. 2 years ago, or actually almost 3 years ago now, ILWU Local 20 in Longview was faced with a company, IGT, that built a new grain terminal there and proposed to run it on a non-union basis. And originally, years ago, there was tremendous solid support for the union there. Trains were stopped. Many hundreds of people were arrested. And finally, and this is another instance of a political settlement, the governor of Washington eventually worked out a deal in which the union did win some job rights at the Longview terminal of EGT. However, that was a give-back contract, and the rest of the grain bosses in the Northwest used that to bludgeon the rest of the union, and they demanded that the other locals in the Northwest accept a similar give-back contract. And the Local 8 in Portland and the Vancouver Local refused to do that. And when they refused the effort of the bosses to impose that contract, they were locked out, and that is the background of the current situation. So we can see that one negotiated political settlement has led to what many people would consider a rather disastrous situation. And I certainly agree with what Mike said, that much of the absence of labor support for the lockout or for the locked out workers is because they've been bamboozled and confused and propagandized by the Oregonian, which is the main source of information about labor affairs in Northwest.
So
I wish that the Northwest labor press would pay more attention than they have to this issue.
That's where I wanted to go with the question. Two questions, actually, as we're winding down here. The first one is, where can our listeners go to find out more information about this? And it's disheartening that the labor press is not stepping up. Other than your website, which or your the emails you send out, which I receive and I'm thankful for. And then the second part is, what can folks who are listening and concerned about this do?
Well, I think that probably the best source of information are the locals here in Portland and Vancouver, the ones whose members are locked out and who are on the picket line every day. They have some very important videos available online that show what they're up against and what's been going on. We have to remember that this strike has national repercussions because President Obama has directed the Coast Guard to prevent the union from using ships or boats, what we call the Longshoremen's Navy, to set up a picket line outside of those scabbed grain terminals. So the locals are the best source of information, as far as I can tell. And there is a support group organized around the old Occupy Portland organization, which also has online materials. But I must say, it is difficult to get information, even from the dispatcher, the International Longshoremen Union's newspaper. And so I think that we have to rely on critical readings of Richard Reed's following of the situation in the Oregonian. So and I should add that, in fact, the ILWU has recently withdrawn from the AFL-CIO because of issues raised like the electricians' fight with them over the two electricians' jobs at Terminal 6 in Portland.
Okay, great information. We'll close by letting folks know that they can check out ILWU Local 8 and Local 4. Google those folks and see what they've got on their websites.
And Local 5 as well, Local 5 at the Powell's Bookstore.
And 5 at Powell's. Thanks very much for the information, something to be aware of as we head into 2014. Wishing you a Happy New Year. Thank you for calling in.
Happy New Year to all.
Thank you. And we'll close down for the evening. Thank you for being here, Michael.
A pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Lane Ponce, and you are
Michael Morrow.
And we're closing for our Labor Radio Show.
See you next year.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor a New Year's Eve dance party with Palante and Jujuba. This salsa and Afrobeat dance party is a benefit for Mercy Corps on New Year's Eve, December 31st from 9 p.m. till 1 a.m. at the Red Rose Ballroom, 1829 Northeast Alberta. A salsa dance lesson will start at 8:30 p.m. Musical worlds converge at the roots when Nigerian band Jujuba and Afro-Cuban band Palante bring the Portland community together for this high-energy dance party to support the international relief work of Mercy Corps. Jujuba delivers funky, danceable rhythms, and Palante performs fiery hot salsa and Latin jazz. On December 31st, the Red Rose Ballroom, 9 p.m. till 1 a.m. For details, please go to kboo.fm and click on New Year's Eve Dance Party on the lower right side of the homepage.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Earlier this year, inmates at Two Rivers Correctional Institution in Umatilla, Oregon, performed Shakespeare's King Lear. Tonight, we'll hear excerpts of the performance narrated by Johnny Stallings, their volunteer director. The play opened with pianist David Gilmore, an inmate at Two Rivers Correctional Institution.
Poor naked wretches, wheresoe'er thou art, that bide the pelting of this pitiless storm, how shall your houseless heads and unfed sides